It's just about 10 minutes after 8 on this Friday, the 10th of August. I'm John Munson, sitting in for Joy Cardine. Joy will be back on Monday. Well, being the 8 o'clock hour on a Friday, it's time for our Week in Review, where we take a look at the week's top stories from a couple of different political perspectives, the right and the left. And we have joining us this morning in our Madison studios, Dave Blaska, who's a former Dane County supervisor and an appointee with the Thompson administration. And as I said, he's joining us from our studios in Madison.
Indeed, I am, John.
Good morning, Dave.
Good morning.
And joining us by telephone is Louis Fortas, editor-in-chief of the Shepherd Express newspaper in Milwaukee and a former Democratic state lawmaker. Good morning, Mr. Fortas.
Good morning, John, and good morning, Dave.
Good morning, Louis.
Okay, so now we have the lineup. Now we start the game. Let's take a look at state issues first, and that is completely arbitrary on my part. State lawmakers are still working on the budget. We're well past July 1st. Fortunately, in Wisconsin, or maybe unfortunately, we get to just use last year's numbers until the legislature and the governor agree on what the next budget is. So far, there hasn't been a lot of compromise, just a little bit of movement on the university front just recently. But let's take that issue first, and we'll start with Dave Blaska.
Well, it's... I suppose you could probably find a small room where people actually care a whole lot about this issue because we do have a continuing budget. And like you said, it's either good or it's bad. It's good because business as usual. Maybe the new budget wasn't such a good budget and the old budget was better. But if we did have government grind to a halt, as Newt Gingrich, a good decade or so ago, did on the federal side, the federal government, you have to have a budget or things stop. That would be more of an impetus to get this deal done.
Mr. Fortas, you want to chime in on this?
Well, one thing when I was in the legislature, we didn't have air conditioning in the Capitol at that point. And one of the arguments against air conditioning in the Capitol was it would make sure that the budget would get completed early because no one wanted to sit in the state capitol when it was 90-some degrees outside and even hotter in the capitol. So anyway, they air condition it, and now see what you have. Anyway, there are problems if this budget doesn't get resolved. You have students who want to go to the universities who don't know what their tuition's going to be. You have, more importantly, you have school districts that are trying to plan for next school year, and they don't know what kind of allocation they're going to be getting from the state. So there are these and many, many more instances where the state budget is important. I think the Republicans have boxed themselves in with this idea of, you know, they're not going to accept any kind of tax increase. And one of the things that they rail against, for example, is this tax increase on hospitals. What really is going on is it's actually a kind of a brilliant move, whoever came up with it. The medical program for low-income people. The Medicaid program gets a match of $58 from the federal government for every $42 the state puts up. So what the state is proposing here is to increase the tax on hospitals, get that money matched at $58 for every $42, and then reimburse the hospitals who treat Medicaid patients at a higher amount. So the hospitals are going to be getting, as a whole, are going to be getting more money. Even though their taxes have been increased, they're going to get more back in terms of an increase in payments for treating Medicaid patients. And there will be money left over for other health programs. I mean, that...
Louis, it's such a good deal that the hospitals are opposed to it.
You know, the one reason the hospitals are opposed to it, the hospitals are opposed to the fact that there are responsible hospitals that are taking Medicaid patients, and there are others that aren't. And I think this is an encouragement for all the hospitals to pitch in and help in a situation like this. But it is a very smart move, and that's being rejected.
Well, it's what's being rejected, I think, and I don't know that too many people going around saying that we have to increase taxes, not even the governor, and because it's not a popular thing to do. You know, we've had more tax studies come out that still show Wisconsin in the top 5 or 7 positions in the nation. So I don't think that the problem that we have in Wisconsin is that our taxes aren't high enough.
I don't.
Well, let's.
Yes.
Oh, go ahead.
No, that's okay. What? Carry on.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's something that I think even the Democrats in the legislature shy away from. I mean, when you've got my good friend Therese Brousseau down here in Madison and Fred Risser coming up with a beer tax, you know, it's just, you know, it's symbolic. You know, it's sort of like, you know, can't we keep our Michael Moores and our Al Sharptons quiet for a while? You know, that's not something that the Democratic Party of my youth and my father as a state legislator, Lewis, they thought that was very good.
Well, I mean, no one's, Dave, I mean, come on, no one is
you want to raise the tax on beer?
No one's arguing that, you know, people like taxes. At the same time, I mean, if you want something to work, you have to support
it.
And
I mean,
when you go buy a car, for example, you don't say, I want the cheapest car. When you go buy a house, you don't say, I want the cheapest house. You want to get your money's worth. And that's all we're talking about here is let's have some policies that may cost a little money, but we have this great quality of life in Wisconsin.
We do.
It doesn't come for free.
No, I understand that. But
we pay for it.
Lewis,
and I don't want to live in Louisiana. I want to live in Wisconsin. I don't want to live in a state that doesn't raise taxes and doesn't have taxes or very low taxes and has a terrible quality of life. I'm not interested in that.
Well, I don't know. I mean, some of those states are not Louisiana, but, you know, Tennessee and other states, you know, Wisconsin should have their growth rate, you know, population.
Let's talk a little bit about the budget process itself. It was suggested to me by someone, and I'm sure that he was making a joke, but it was suggested to me that one way to get the budget passed on time would be to make sure that none of the members of the legislature or the governor got paid until there was a new budget.
Well, I like piece rate, piece work here, but I don't know if they may unionize, and that's the problem.
I think... I think rather than little tricks like that, I think people just need to sit down and in a serious way and not, you know, not box themselves in with positions that then they can't feel they can move on, and go in there open-minded, understanding that, you know, there is give and take, and a good compromise means that no one is totally happy with the situation. And I think, you know, ultimately it will get resolved. It has to get resolved. But it's just people posture, people are playing to their bases, and that's...
What do you mean by playing to their bases?
I mean,
they got elected. They got elected for a reason, and most of these legislators had a pretty specific platform that they ran on. It's pandering to their bases when conservatives do it, but it's upholding your values when liberals do it. Let's concede here, and I'm going to just say this too. It's not like we got Chuck Quayle and Scott Jensen at loggerheads across the table from each other.
I'd rather have Chuck Quayle and Scott Jensen. They were both very intelligent people, and they knew how to could fight, but they ultimately came up with a decent budget.
And Senator Robeson is not intelligent?
No, I think she's very smart.
All right, and what about Mr.
I don't know Hibsch.
Hibsch, okay.
I don't know him. I've never met him.
I have, and I'll say he's quite intelligent. In fact, I don't know Judy Robeson, but I know the other three quite well, you know, as well as a person who could, in my position, would. But I think they're all intelligent, but I think there's a little bit less ego involved, I think, right now. That's why I think we will have a deal, and that's why. And you're right about the school districts and the local governments. They'd like to do their budget, but they'll put a range in there, and they'll have some things they'll have to go off the table or increase taxes. And when you have, even in Dane County here, we have a liberal county executive. She always... Kathleen Falk, she always tried to hold the line on taxes here in Dane County, so she understood that. We've had school referenda. 2 out of the 3 went down about 2 or 3 years ago, spending referenda. So I think that the people, even here in Dane County, are a little bit resistant to higher taxes.
I mean, Kathleen Falk has been there 10 years, and she's...
Seems like more.
Pardon me?
It seems like more.
Yeah, she's been very fiscally responsible.
Yes.
I mean, extraordinarily.
Except for this recent RTA thing, which I don't know has too much interest statewide, but it would make Dane County the most heavily taxed county of the 72 in Wisconsin, offloading all of our transportation onto
shifting from one taxing.
No, it's adding a tax. We would have a 6% sales tax in Dane County effective.
But it would be taking a tax burden off of another local tax. But again, by and large, I think we both agree that Kathleen Falk has been very fiscally responsible
until recently.
Okay, let's go to the phones and take a call from Mike in Cottage Grove. Mike, good morning. You're on the air.
Good morning. Something one of your guests just said really set me off. I'm sick and tired of when I hear people say they want, you know, if you take a position, you're not going to raise taxes, you're pandering to some base. Well, what about the Democrats who right now are pandering to public employee unions in this state? If I got to listen to one more public employee or one more person whine and cry about how much money of mine, taxpayer money, public radio and public TV gets, I'm sick of it. K-12 education, let's put the money there. That's what they're talking about doing. I don't hear your guests complaining about that, but I guess, you know, in the end, At some point, let's remember, Jim Doyle got elected running on a no-tax increase pledge. Let's not forget, just last November, even Jim Doyle said he wouldn't raise taxes. So now he's lied to the people. Is that what, the, you know, one of your guests, is that what both guests think should happen? If people run and say they're not going to raise taxes, then by God, as elected officials, I elected them. The point is on this budget, you know what's great? If the people in this state want higher taxes and out-of-control spending and the best-paid public employees in the country with the best benefits, then you know what? Vote the Republicans out. I don't think that'll happen. In fact, I think this is the greatest battle yet because this will bring the Republicans back into control in this state.
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, I think people are sensitive to that, and that's why... That's why I think that we're at loggerheads. We have divided government here in Wisconsin. It's kind of interesting. I think sometimes the best thing for either political party, but in this case Republicans, is to have the opposite party in power for a while.
I'll take credit for the comment about pandering to the bases. And it was interesting. I did not say Republicans pandering to the base. I don't think either party should pander to the base. And I think that when you campaign and you make statements that that you cannot control. I mean, you can vote against all taxes, and if there's some emergency in the state or whatever where you need a tax increase, for example, if what happened in Minnesota with the bridge collapsing, if we had a few bridge collapses and we needed to rebuild these bridges and we needed to raise taxes to do something like that, and these, you know, people that run, both Democrats and Republicans. I didn't say one or the other when I made my comment. But when you're going to start making statements when you're running for office that are probably impossible to stick with, George H.W. Bush did his, you know, no new taxes.
Yes, and look what happened to him. Seriously,
and look. I mean, he had to face the reality of governing, and he had to raise taxes. And what I'm saying is that people who pander and make these statements, Democrat or Republican, I think that's unfortunate.
You know, number 41, George Bush Sr., did say, and I was there in the audience in New Orleans at the Superdome when he said, "Read my lips, no new taxes." And he suffered the consequences for that.
He had
a lot of Republicans sitting on their hands saying, well, you know, who did we vote for? It's a difficult thing to say no. I mean, I've been elected too at the local level here.
I know that.
And you have all kinds of people come before the board with wonderful proposals for spending. But, you know, and when I did the knock down the doors, and I was very good at that until my last election and when the voters wised up and voted me out, was the people, you know, I'd ask them, what do you want? And they say, Dave, just keep my taxes down. Those kind of folks don't tend to show up at hearings. So just let me make a point about taxes. We have our principal sources of income as a state government in Wisconsin are the personal income tax and the sales tax. Both, believe it or not, have a great relationship to the ability to pay. If your income goes up, so does your income tax. And if you buy more things because you've got the income to spend, so does your sales tax. So it's pretty well aligned with your ability to pay. And if people are able to pay and the economy is going great guns, and hopefully we'll talk about the economy in a little bit, then the state will reap the rewards. So I think it's a good system, and I don't know why we have to keep adding on more taxes. I'd like to hear, we talked about the university a little bit, and you know, here I am biting the hand that feeds me. If the power goes out midway through my oration here, I'll know that the budget cuts have hit. But I'd like to see the University of Wisconsin just go forward, go beyond the regents, go to the public and say, here's what we've done to economize. Here's some steps we've taken. You know, we know that everyone has a budget. Here's what we've done.
We need to We need to take a break here, and we'll come back and we'll talk about some more issues here on our Week in Review. I'm John Munson, sitting in for Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. 25 and a half minutes past 8 o'clock. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm John Munson, sitting in for Joy Cardine. Joy will be back on Monday. Well, let's move to some other issues. The economy was mentioned. The stock market has taken something of a plunge, and that could have an impact on people who rely on income from the markets to fuel their retirement. Let's take a call from Linda in Monroe. Linda, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Good morning, gentlemen. Now, I believe the issue of the week should be why the banks, as well as the insurance companies and the pension funds, invested in risky hedge funds, which had invested in these risky housing loans, and why didn't the SEC, who was warned after Enron, put regulations in and enforce the Sarbanes-Oxley Act, didn't put in strict enough regulations, and what's your opinion?
Well, you know, I'm one of these people that I've always got one of the financial websites up, and I obsess on how my 401k is doing, and you know, I'm one of those that's looking at retirement, which again is a good lesson: diversify, diversify, diversify. But you know, a lot of it is, and I don't know what government can do. Obviously, we had Countrywide Financial give some bad news today, and AIG yesterday, and it's even roiling the markets in Europe. There are those who want the Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac to pump more money into the system. And anything that can be done to calm nerves, and I'd like to see what the market does today. I think that's going to tell a lot. But the free market part of me says these bad loans made by individuals who really couldn't afford what they were getting, and they never should have taken these loans. I mean, we're looking at 1.7 million housing home foreclosures in the United States in roughly a year and a half here. That's a lot, even for a big country. But something tells me that this bad money has to get out of the system.
Mr. Fortas?
I think...
Did I just stupefy everyone?
I think they're correct when they say the two emotions are fear and greed when it comes to investing, especially on the stock market. And the greed thing certainly takes over. And I think, as the caller points out, you know, where is the government on this? I know that, you know, since Reagan, it's been very fashionable to be, you know, attacking any kind of government, any kind of government involvement. And I think there is certainly a very important role. And I used to be an economics professor, so, you know, I can sympathize with Dave in saying, you know, that, okay, you know, people are adults and they make these decisions, they take some risk, and that's the way the free market works. At the same time, there are a lot of people that just don't have the time or the background or whatever to be really understanding the markets, and that's where the government needs to come in to say that when you're getting a particular instrument, a mortgage instrument, that, you know, it has to be very clear and understandable as to what the risks really are. And if the risks are too great, I think that they should be in a different category where it's really clear that they are, you know, very high risk loans. So people don't get kind of lured into a situation that when the market begins to turn around and the economy begins to go the other way, and it always does because that's part of a free market, that they don't get hurt like they're getting hurt right now. And this is serious, because this is
well, if you put training wheels on people here, they'll never learn to ride the bicycle. I mean you know, let's just take a look at what FDR did, and there's the new book out. I wish I had the name of it in front of me, but that really kind of takes a revisionist approach to the New Deal. He tried to fool the stock market for 10 or 12 years, and until World War II came along, after some small improvement by 1937 and 38, it was the market was back down again. You have to let markets work. It's like water. You can put a dam up here, but the water will go somewhere else. It will just go, and you know that as an economist, Lewis.
It's fine to let the market work. I agree with you that the markets are very powerful and they move forward. And it's like a river. If you put a dam, they go around it. But what you can do, and this is the role of government, is you set certain rules And then you say, okay, now within these constraints, we have zoning laws, for example. We don't allow people to do whatever they want. We have environmental laws where you just can't dump, you know, the waste in the middle of the road.
Right, but it's still a free choice. I can choose to live in.
But what I'm saying, what I'm saying is, set the rules, and then let the market work. And when you're dealing with single unit mortgages for a single family home or a duplex or whatever. These folks, many people buying these, are not the most sophisticated investors. They're just trying to get a place to live. And so as a result of that, I think we have to be real cautious in terms of making sure people understand what they're getting themselves into.
Well,
That's all I'm saying.
There's full disclosure.
Let the market work.
No, there's no laws. No rules were broken. I mean, plenty of articles.
That's what I'm saying. The problem is there were no rules to be broken, and that's the issue.
Well, what rules would you issue? I mean, the only thing you could do is tell a person that you're getting an ARM. It's very low up front here. Because that's the only way you can afford a house, and if I'm willing to go this far, and I think if people did, saying, you know, this rate could go up. That's why they call it adjustable, and you may not be able to afford
it.
And you are leveraging too much. Excuse me.
This could go up X number of points per
year.
Well,
you know, you're going to cook something up here, and we're going to have to open a new division of state government. But that's fine. I mean, that's what you guys like to do.
But, I mean, you're going to need a job. After you trash the university in a few minutes, I mean, you're going to need a job doing that. And, you know, you
Leo's
going to
cut my power off here.
Stuff, so.
Yeah.
Well, Leo might be out of a job too, so maybe.
No, I don't want that. We're going to take. I got a glass up here. You know, we're taking donations here, so.
Okay, well, it better be a big glass. Let's move to something else. National story. Earlier this week, President Bush signed a law that would expand warrantless surveillance of foreign terror suspects. I know we've got at least one caller who wants to weigh in on this. Let's go to Ray in Merrimack. Ray, good morning. You're on the air.
Good morning, gentlemen. Gentlemen, I hope that this, I don't think this is a bipartisan issue, because what happened in Congress took both the Democrats and the Republicans, but what no one seems to be upset about, at least as I am, is the fact that we have essentially have just thrown out the Fourth Amendment to the Constitution and given the President and the Attorney General the power to surveil on anyone they want. I understand the law says that they can only surveil if a call comes from a outside the country to a in the country, but with no one else to look over their shoulder, what's to stop them from surveilling anyone they want? Is the Fourth Amendment important? I think it's a lot more important than anything that we've talked about here yet today.
Well, let's let our guests have a chance to respond. Mr. Fortas, why don't you go first this time?
Okay. I think what we had prior to this law being signed by Bush is that if there was a suspected terrorist of any kind, that there was a procedure to get authorization, and it was a very quick procedure, and if you didn't feel you had time, you could go ahead and do it and get authorization afterward. We had a procedure. It was fine. They violated it, and what happened here is the Democrats now, out of fear of being accused of being soft on terrorism or whatever, have basically caved in and I think did something that is not a wise move, and as a result, I think the one positive thing is I think they put a 6-month sunset on it, and I think this is going to be, it has to come back in 6 months, but still, I think it's not the finest moment for our country or for the Democrats. Okay, what can you say after that, Dave? I mean, my God, I just did your job.
Well, thank you very much, Louis. Don't make me come over there now, okay? I mean, I know you're in Milwaukee, but I'll find you.
Okay.
I'm just not worried about this. I think I'm as much of a civil libertarian as anyone. Half of my working life I spent in the newspaper, daily newspaper business, and as a reporter and editor, and especially the First Amendment, but this is the Fourth Amendment. I think, you know, we're in, I saw a column, I think, by Wesley Clark that wants to treat these terrorists as criminals, but that's the same mistake Democrats keep making, is that it's a criminal matter, and you can only arrest them after they've done something bad. Well, that's a little too late for a couple thousand people in the Twin Towers. If you know about Pearl Harbor, you have to act before Pearl Harbor, I would think. And that's what we're talking about here. Unfettered, I don't know that. I understand with anything there's the potential for abuse. And what, you know, the caller said, what is to stop them from? And that's a problem. That really is. But given the risk that we face here, and, you know, we've had more things coming out of London and Scotland and plots to take down airplanes over the Atlantic Ocean, I think the threat is still real. And I talked to too many of my liberal friends who, because we have not been attacked, because the Bush administration has been successful since 9/11, say that there really is no threat, but there is a threat.
I think I was real surprised to hear you bring up the Twin Towers and all, because the fact of the matter is we did have warnings. There was that U.S. government document saying that they're planning to fly planes in the buildings, and Condoleezza Rice chose to ignore that. Your other point was saying something about, you know, if we think something's going to happen or we have an indication that something's going to happen, rather than letting it happen, you know, you should act preemptively.
Right.
Well, we do have a procedure where if you think that someone is a terrorist, that something's going to happen, you can get authorization to wiretap or whatever. I mean, those procedures were in place, done in a constitutional manner. This is basically suspending, as we keep chipping away at our civil liberties, I think that, yeah, a little chip here, a little chip there, and all of a sudden, you have a hole. And I think that right now we're moving in one direction, and I hope that it'll begin to come back to respecting civil liberties a little more.
This is a little bit not an ad hominem, but I'm just going to say here that given that you're such a civil libertarian, I presume that you are very strong on the right to bear arms.
Yeah, I have no problem with people having hunting and all. I think that.
Well, what about?
I mean, like AK-47s in a major city, central city. No, I don't think that's a particularly good idea because there's no reason to have it. But I do think everybody has a right to have a gun and go hunting and.
Well, I mean, talking about self-defense. I'm not talking about hunting. But I didn't mean to divert the agenda here.
To change the agenda here for John.
Yeah.
I don't have an agenda, or if I do, it's hidden. It's in this stack of papers, and I can't find
John,
it.
John, you're pandering to the base. I know you are.
Okay.
Yeah,
that's
me.
I can tell that.
Yeah, I'm pandering to the radical moderate base.
Wisconsin Public Radio base. You got it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm the only completely objective human you'll ever meet.
You ought to be in a museum.
Yeah, well, some people would suggest that, and soon. Let's move to another issue. U.S. Senator Russ Feingold, a Wisconsin Democrat, has introduced two resolutions that would censure President Bush, Vice President Dick Cheney, and Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez. This isn't the first time he's tried this, and as near as I can tell, this attempt will be just as unsuccessful as the last. But let's get some comments. Dave Blaska, you go first this time.
Yeah, pandering to the base. I think the White House gave a good response. They said that we are well aware that Senator Feingold disagrees with us. That's what it amounts to.
Well, I think that you're right, John. It probably will not go anywhere. And I also think that Senator Feingold has been very measured in this. I don't think, you know, he's not running around screaming for impeachment or anything like that. But I think a censure, when you take a country into war, and, you know, for a certain set of reasons, and you find out that none of them were valid, and you know all the information that's been out there for the last 4 or 5 years in terms of, you know, distorting the material and the intelligence and blah 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 blah, that, you know, that is serious. I mean, people have died, people have come back very seriously injured. We've killed many Iraqis, innocent Iraqis.
Not as many as the Iraqis have killed.
We've, and that may be true, but we kind of broke that whole thing open to, the forces were contained. It was kind of like when Tito was in power in Yugoslavia, the forces were contained. But anyway, I think a censure is a very measured approach at this point. I think what Tom DeLay did with the impeachment of Clinton, I think was not good for our country. And I think that Feingold's very measured approach by not talking about impeachment but talking about censure is not unreasonable, and I think it should be debated, and I agree with you. It's not going to go anywhere, but it's still important in a democracy to have that brought up.
You know, and by your reasoning, though, Lewis, Senator Feingold also ought to include a majority of the Senate in his censure movement, shouldn't he?
Well, if the executive branch is controlling the intelligence and it's presented to the Senate in a particular way, and you have you trust your intelligence agencies and you don't think they've been politicized, then again, I wouldn't have voted for the war, but I know a lot of people did, and the argument they're using is that they were presented with this intelligence, and I think that's not an unreasonable argument. I also think at this stage of the game, I respect the senators that say, "Hey, I made a mistake." Okay.
Although, interestingly enough, the public opinion is turning the other direction. It's actually support for the war effort is actually up. Bush's approval rating is up from it was 32%, now it's up to 36%, and disapproval of the war is down to, I think, 51%. It was 61%. That this you've got columnists saying that the surge is working, including some national intelligence experts that are usually associated with the Democrats. O'Hanlon and Pollack, who had the famous op-ed in the New York Times on July 30th. So there's a lot of evidence that that the surge is working.
I think if you look at those same polls, and I don't disagree with your numbers, but if you look at those same polls, if you also, with the question of should we have gone into this war, those numbers are not decreasing.
Well, and you know, and hindsight's wonderful. I mean, it really is.
I understand, but I'm saying, but when you present the numbers, I don't disagree with your numbers, but there's also the number that we shouldn't have done it is very high. But now that we've done it, maybe we are making a little bit of progress. I don't know. You don't know. I'm not there.
I understand your Tito analogy, too. I really do. In other words, he kept the bottle, everything in a bottle. But the problem was that the toxins were still there. And the fact of the matter is that, and I'll say this, the Middle East right now is not a healthy society. It's not a society where you can raise children, where you can plan for the future, where you can save, where you can grow, where you can learn. And that needs to change. And to have that anomaly in the middle of an increasingly smaller world is causing problems worldwide. You know, what is it with the Koreans being kept hostage and kidnapped? I thought the United States was the great Satan, but maybe South Korea is the little Satan. I mean, there's not a corner of the globe that you can talk about that doesn't have some problem emanating from the Middle East. So, we've got to solve.
County.
Excuse me.
Except for Dane County.
Well, I don't know that yet.
We need to take a break and then come back and talk about some other issues. And we have some more callers who are waiting to get in on our discussion. Let me give the phone numbers once more before we go to our break. 800-642-1234. 800-642-1234. That's toll free anywhere you can hear the broadcast. In Madison, we'd prefer that you use 263-1890. We're talking about the Week in Review. It's our weekly program on Fridays at 8 o'clock, and we have guests from the left and right discussing the issues of the week. Dave Blaska, former supervisor of Dane County and appointee of the Thompson administration, and Lewis Fortas, editor-in-chief of the Shepherd Express newspaper in Milwaukee and a former Democratic state lawmaker. We'll be right back and talk about some international issues after we take this break. I'm John Munson. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's about 8:45 on a Friday morning, the 10th of August, 2007. Well, later on today, nearly every day, we see someone in the public eye apologizing after they've been found with their hand in the cookie jar. Are they sorry for what they did, or are they just apologizing because they were caught? That's the topic on At Issue after 5 o'clock today. Ben Marins and his guests will discuss that. Right now, we're discussing the news stories of the week from a couple of different political perspectives, and we are ready to take your perspective on this as well at 800-642-1234 or 263-1890. news on the international front. And since we kind of opened this one up just before the break, let's go back to it. The Taliban warns of a bad result after President Bush and Prime Minister Karzai rule out concessions to free the Koreans who were kidnapped. A purported Taliban spokesman warns of what he calls a bad result for 21 South Korean hostages unless militant prisoners are freed. The Taliban wants Afghanistan to release some of its captured fighters in exchange for the hostages. So far, two male captives have been executed. President Bush and Afghan President Hamid Karzai have ruled out making any concessions with the militants. In South Korea, relatives of the hostages say they're disappointed with the result of Bush and Karzai's meeting. South Korea's foreign minister is warning the standoff could be a long one. Well, this is a front of the war on terror that doesn't get as much publicity as the as Iraq, but there's still a lot going on in Afghanistan. Let's start with you, Mr. Fortas.
Well, that is the place where we should be fighting the war on terrorism, not Iraq. But having said that, there is some good news. I heard on the radio driving in this morning that the Taliban did say they were not going to execute any more people until they've, you know, sat down and had some serious negotiations or whatever. So at least there is some time to try to work this out. And I think it is unfortunate that the that, you know, it's become this whole worldwide network where now South Koreans are involved in this.
Well, how are they involved?
I mean, being
well, that's my point, though. I mean, I hope that people understand that this is a real foe here. That they, you know, they don't strike big. They're not going to sink the fleet. But they you know, the idea of terror, the idea of uncertainty, is in many ways even more cruel. And you know, I mean, just one quote I had here when Karzai visited Bush at Camp David, he says, "Terrorists have killed our school children. They have burned our schools. They have killed international helpers." I mean, what kind of people do this? I mean, you have in Iraq too. You have they're killing school children. They're bombing weddings. You know, this kind of idea. And we know that the Taliban, I mean, even blasted off the face of the earth one of the great cultural relics. I think it was a Buddha.
A Buddhist. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, and this is the mentality that we're fighting here, not just in Afghanistan. I'm pleased to see that at least even Barack Obama says he would go into Pakistan. If you think Iraq is a problem, go into Pakistan.
Yeah. Hey, I think we have our moment of agreement, so let's...
I have a warm glow.
Enjoy this for a moment. I think we both totally agree that the Taliban is a extraordinarily destructive force, and at least from what I can see, there doesn't seem to be very much positive at all in their efforts, and I think they've done terrible things, and I think they have.
So what's the answer, Lewis?
I think the answer is we should redirect resources to Afghanistan and try to fight the Taliban rather than the civil war.
But here's the problem. This goes back to our eavesdropping thing and everything else, is that they're really, really not. I mean, to think of them as the standing army on the banks of the Rhine.
They're not.
You know, they're not.
They're not.
They're in the internet. I mean, that's where they are. They're in. I mean, they're Leo looks okay to me here, but they're everywhere. And so you know, I don't mind being paranoid about it, but they have the ability to move. They have the ability to come through our border with Mexico. You know, I'm throwing in another issue here.
I mean, they're not coming. I mean, they're over there. And
the Taliban per se,
but their ilk is exactly,
and that's why Bush is pursuing, and Blair before him are pursuing this war.
And I think many people, and self included, certainly supported the going into Afghanistan and going after the Taliban after 9/11. That's our moment of agreement here. So I'm trying to build on
that. Well, let's move on then before we lose that moment. And remember, these programs are recorded and people can go back and listen to them again and again and again.
That's right. You should have told me that before. I'm sorry.
I think that was in the fine print of your contract. Let's take another phone call. This time we'll go to Kurt in Chippewa Falls. Kurt wants to join us on a related topic. Kurt, good morning. Thanks for calling.
Thank you. Comment for Mr. Blaska. How does he reconcile the adamant refusal to fund through taxes everything here at home that he wants to continue raising taxes 100 times greater to defend what we have here at home, supposedly through military intervention around the world.
Well, first of all, you're talking about President Bush, right? And I don't know that he's raising taxes. I don't think that he's called for a tax increase. He certainly could have. I think he was asleep at the switch when his own Republican Party controlled the Congress and had all these add-ons and earmarks. And by the way, I see that our own Representative Obie, I think, from northern Wisconsin there, is, I think, number two or number five or on the list of earmarkers, which is a good way to sneak in spending. But I would just say this, and I think you at the end you said you gave the right answer. We could have universal health care. We could have a lot of things. We could have pre-kindergarten, day school, and whatnot. All those wonderful things go by the boards if we don't if we're not secure against attack. And I just read the quote from Karzai: "Terrorists who killed our school children." You know, you're not going to have a prosperous society, a healthy society, if you live in constant fear. And that is the number one job of federal government. You know, whether they should be doing a lot of this other stuff, I'm going to debate. But I hope that we don't debate. And I think Lewis and I had our kumbaya moment here when we said, we got to protect ourselves.
There was a moment.
There was a moment, yes.
Well, let's talk about the how you pay for this.
If I can, let me respond to the caller. And that is, and I was curious when Dave said, you know, Bush has not raised taxes. That's right. We are spending tens of billions of dollars, I think, per month on this war in Iraq and the like, and we're not raising taxes. So what this means is we're borrowing the money, and we're pawning it off on the next generation, the children and the grandchildren. So, yeah, I think not only is he spending money like crazy on this war and not you know, fighting his party on the earmarks when his party, when the Republicans did control Congress, but it's just irresponsible. He's borrowing the money and then pushing it off on future generations. He's spending it and he's not taxing and being responsible about it.
Let's move on to another issue. The leaders of Iraq and Iran met earlier this week. Iraq's Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki was in Iran discussing ways to rein in violence in his war-torn country. Al-Maliki is seen as somebody who is fairly close to the Iranians, and certainly his backers are. What, if anything, does this mean that al-Maliki is having talks with the Iranian leaders? And I'll just throw this out as a toss-up. Whoever wants to go first can go first.
Alphonse and Gaston, moment here. Go ahead, Liz.
Okay, I'll take this on. The situation that you have is the world's a whole lot more complicated place than our current administration has treated it. And there are all these relationships and histories going on between these various countries, and it's not black and white. And when you have terrorism and you have a situation right now where you're not fighting, you know, one standing army versus another, but it's all these attacks and suicide bombing and all this, you need to be talking to some of the sponsors, if they are the sponsors, and if they're not the sponsors, they certainly can lean on people who are the sponsors to begin to cool this down, because you're not going to do it with firepower. I think even David Petraeus has said, 20% of this is going to be fighting and 80% of it's going to be political discussion. And I think if you're going to discuss this stuff, I remember a good friend of mine who was a leader in the Jewish community, and she would be criticized by some of the conservative Jews for having, you know, for dealing and advocating, you know, talking to the Palestinians. This was about 20 years ago. And Esther Leah Ritz would look at people and just say, "You don't make peace with your friends. You make peace with your enemies. And if you want to get to peace, you're going to talk to people you just don't like and you just don't respect. But you got to do it, because that's how you're going to reach peace." And I think that's what's going on here. There are people that you know, that are maybe totally despicable. But if you want to have peace, you got to deal with the people that are causing the problems.
I'm fine with that. You know, if al-Maliki wants to talk to Ahmadinejad, he can do so. And they're both Shias, so that might That might be an avenue there. So that's fine. I don't know the United States has to engage on one-on-one with all of these, but I think for him, by the way, let's not have any more talk then about al-Maliki being a stooge or a puppet of the United States. Obviously, he's not.
All right.
Let's take another phone call quickly here. We'll go to Jim in Milwaukee. Jim, good morning. You're on the air.
Yes, I'd like to talk to you about Pat Tillman, Lindy England, and the rest of the story. And right or wrong, American soldiers believe that they're fighting for freedom and justice, and they pay heavy prices for this. So Pat Tillman paid the ultimate price, and the government lied about his death to us and his family. And it raises the question, if the government will lie on this, what else will they lie on? And the second question it raises is, why do people believe politicians from either party without cross-checking the facts? Lindy England also paid a price for her belief that she was following orders in Abu Ghraib and faces possible prison time as a consequence of this. Yeah, but let's contrast the freedom and justice for the higher-ups in all of this. The generals behind all of this face no consequences, and they receive their pensions, and they and the higher-ups in the administration also have many benefits coming to them.
Well, we're almost out of time, so let's let our guests have a chance to respond. Take about 30 seconds each.
Just real quickly, I mean, I think the general, and I don't know his name, involved with the Pat Tillman thing is facing, I think he's already retired, he's facing a reduction in rank and therefore a reduction in pension.
So. I think that we need to start holding people accountable, and we're not doing it right now, and people like Rumsfeld retire and walk away from this whole mess that he was instrumental in creating.
What do you want to do to Rumsfeld? Do you want jail time, or what are you looking at here?
No, I think that there should be some kind of investigation into what's really going on, and let's
know what went on. It's an open book. You know, it didn't go well. I mean, that's there for everyone to see. You know, I mean, the guy screwed up, okay? I mean, that's... There's nothing I can say about it. There's
I'm
nothing criminal.
Have a second moment of agreement.
We did. I mean, the war has not gone well. I don't know anyone can say that it's gone well. But whether it was the right war to fight or not, that's a different issue.
Well, gentlemen, thank you for all of the agreements and disagreements this morning. It's always this is my favorite hour of the week to get to do this, and not just because it's always the last hour of programming that I do before I go back to my other life, but appreciate your being with us this morning and helping us have a discussion.
John, thanks for your patience and understanding.
Okay, and thank you, John, and thank you, David.
All right, you bet, Lewis.
Take care.
Dave Blaska is a former Dane County supervisor and a Thompson appointee. Louis Fortas, editor-in-chief of the Shepherd Express newspaper in Milwaukee and a former Democratic state lawmaker. This program was produced by Christy Taylor and Leo Duran, with on-air production by Martinez White. Leo Duran also helped out on the air. And if you would like a copy of this last hour of radio, you can get it by calling the radio store at 800-747-7444. Ask for program 810C. That's C as in cat. 810C. I'm John Munson, sitting in for Joy Cardine, who will be back next week. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.